Welcome to this podcast. It's making me thirsty, the number one destination for Seinfeld fans. This episode 166. You know today's guest from Witchblade, Sense 8, All Right Already, Friends, Cheers. And of course, he played Joel Rifkin in the season 5 episode of Seinfeld, The Masseuse. Please welcome Anthony Chistaro. Anthony, hey. Thanks for joining.
Thank you, Tony. And extra credit for the proper Italian pronunciation.
Now, Anthony is no stranger to Thursday nights on NBC. That's for sure. So, and we'll get into that. But take us back, Anthony. The Masseuse, November of 1993. Our friend of the show, Peter Melman, wrote that episode. Over 28 million people watched that on Thursday night. Tell us a little bit how the role of Joel Rifkin, the serial killer, came about.
For me, I actually, Mark Hirschfeld, who was casting at the time, brought me in for another role. It was the week before for Gina the Barber
from really?
The haircut episode, which I heard you talk about. And in retrospect, after hearing your comments, I'm grateful that I ultimately got to do the play Joel Rifkin. Anyway, they brought me back the following week to audition for Joel. And Jerry was again in the room, and you know, the sort of a couple of other I think George Shapiro was there, who you know, was worked with Jerry for many, many, many years. And it was just a real privilege to have an opportunity to then get cast on Seinfeld. As you mentioned, my first break was Cheers when I first started those many years ago. And then to be able to follow it up a little bit later with Seinfeld was just a real privilege.
Yeah, well, that's actually pretty funny. You call this out there. I'm assuming you're referring to our two up and two down on the barber. yeah, the barber stuff didn't really play that well to us, but it did have Penske in it, which is a great George episode. Yeah. Well, you nailed Joel Rifkin. I mean, we were going over it before you came on. Me and Chris just kind of prepping for the show. Just, you know, you and Julia really Thanks. Played off each other very well. I think Julia had a great episode in this one. And I think, you know, you were a lot to do with that, just the way you played off with each other. You know, I don't want to bounce around too much, but, generally speaking, you know, like you said, you had already auditioned once and now you actually get the role of Rifkin. Tell us about, you know, the set. You're not, like you just mentioned, you've been on the Cheers set. We've heard some people who've been on both shows talk about the differences in maybe the vibe on the set, if you will, from those two shows. But what was your, you know, initial thoughts? You know, this is season 5. They're humming on all cylinders, right? Melman's a respected writer on the show. He's written some of the best episodes. So you got him and you got Larry David and you got Jerry kind of running things. Kind of take us through what that week was like when you first kind of arrived, how those, you know, three main ones, maybe your interactions there with Larry and maybe Peter.
Sure. The set itself had moved. It was at, I think, what, CBS Radford and at the time it was called. And they had just moved to another set. And so Jerry had taken to riding a skateboard between the writer's room and the set. You know, because he was both, you know, writing and performing in the show. And I remember that also Julia Louis-Dreyfus, you know, she had just had a child. And so they had a nursery for her somewhere else on the set. So I actually, it's interesting. I very much appreciated working with her. And she was extremely professional and wonderful. And I really appreciated the fact that, you know, she had her proper priorities. She was taking care of her child. I think she and Brad Hall had, who was on Saturday Night Live, had, you know, they had a child. And so really she, I remember that even for the first audition, first rehearsal, she pretty much came up and said, "Hi, my name is Julia. Nice to meet you. Okay, so where do we go?" And just went right into rehearsing. So it's kind of funny that the person that I had the least interaction with was, you know, throughout the week was Julia Louis-Dreyfus, because she, you know, she had a child that she was happily taken care of. And the vibe on the set was great. Everybody was, you know, these, I just, first of all, I love comedy writers. They're amazing. The fact that they can, you know, come up with something, and even if an actor says, well, I don't know about this, they'll come up with something even better. And, you know, they just really rise to the challenge all the time. I did get a chance to talk with Peter Mellon because he had written the script, and, you know, it was great to catch up and interact with him. Carol Leifer was also on the staff at the time. I later actually got an opportunity to play one of Carol Leifer's boyfriends on
All Right Already.
And you know, Carol, if I remember, what was kind of neat about it was, I think there was one time, I think it's in my memory, and I hope this is right, but there was one time when Julia Louis-Dreyfus wasn't yet at the set or wasn't yet to report, and Carol actually read her scene, which was really great, given that some say that she was the inspiration for Elaine's character. So that was a real treat. And if I'm misremembering, she still read, I know that for sure, and she was still very, very funny, and I wasn't surprised that she got her own show afterwards.
Yeah, absolutely classic episode. So when you got that call back, right, and your agent tells you you're going to play Joel Rifkin, I mean, did that name, this early 90s, right? We just came off Ted Bundy and Dahmer, right? So this kind of thing was, you know,
yeah,
in the public consciousness. So what did you know about Joel Rifkin? I mean, oh, did you think it was hilarious? Like, what were you thinking when you got that
call? I thought it was absolutely hilarious. It was really kind of I could see why it would appeal to somebody like Larry David. You know, I mean, here's a serial killer who, if I remember correctly, at the time, he was pulled over on a routine traffic stop. And he goes, you got me. The bodies are in the trunk. And so, you know, it was kind of a very quirky situation. And of course, you know, in retrospect, you know, 6 months after Elaine recommends that Joel change his name to OJ, OJ Simpson is now being tried for very serious charge. So that was kind of an irony. That's one situation where I've heard people say the episode kind of has a different feel to it when you hit that line.
Yeah, it's definitely talked about a lot. It comes up a lot on the internet and things like that. But it is one of those things that's just like one of those weird, quirky things like that.
Yeah.
I mean, us New Yorkers also love the kind of tie into the Giant Stadium scene. And
yes,
Bob Shepard is the voice who announces you, Joel Rifkin, right, to the, I mean, he's a legendary PA announcer. He did Yankee Stadium and Giant Stadium.
And he
gets to say your name, which is great. Where was that shot, those Giant Stadium?
Well, that's kind of funny. So, yeah, and I think it was Lawrence Taylor that kind of looked up in disgust. But so that was actually shot soundstage that Seinfeld moved into was actually a long, if I remember correctly, it was a longer soundstage than they had previously. So they were able to have more sets. And that was at the far end of the soundstage where they had it set up. And the bleacher, it was kind of funny because the bleachers that they had set up only went to a certain height. And so I wasn't, you know, they said, don't stand up all the way when your name is called, just kind of stand up, you know, partially, but not, so that you actually show that we only have a certain number of performers behind you.
You standing up was just hilarious. Who could be calling me here? You know, it's like, I mean, just classic. So tell us a little bit, just absolutely love the scenes. Obviously, the only scenes are with Julia, but back at the apartment, going through those lists of names, like, the back and forth, like, it just seemed like you two had a great chemistry, you know, as a boyfriend, girlfriend at the time. Stuart, Todd, Alex, you know, like, when you go back with the names, tell us a little bit about, you know, I guess Julia's preparation and how closely you guys kind of worked on that during that week. Were you kind of attached at the hip? Did you get lunch together? Tell us a little bit about the relationship with Julia.
That's funny. I mean, as I might have mentioned earlier, Julia was, you know, busy with her child. And so really the only opportunities that we had to work together were in rehearsal or in performance. There wasn't a lot of small talk. There wasn't a lot of conversation. But I think, I wonder, you know, in retrospect, I wonder if that didn't work to the advantage of these two characters, because, you know, he's a new boyfriend and, you know, the scenes where we're seeing each other are having that feeling of freshness and newness for the first time. So I was perfectly happy and perfectly grateful for the kind of the work environment created. And she's terrific. I mean, that goes without saying in terms of her sense of comedic timing and ability. And I really was just doing everything I could to make sure that I tried to keep up and give her what she needed for her performance. And, you know, it worked out. I actually had lunch with Lisa Edelstein, who played Karen, George's aide. She's, you know, a great, great performer. She was, I think, wasn't she in the pilot of The West Wing, she was Rob Lowe's date, I guess, in the pilot. She did a great job, very funny. And then Jennifer Coolidge, I had actually played Jody the masseuse. I had known from her work at the Groundlings. I mean, I had seen her perform at the Groundlings, and it was really great to spend a little time with Jennifer because this was her first television appearance. And so we got a chance to really talk and continue to be friends after the event. If I just go down the list of everybody else, I suppose Jason Alexander, I recall as being just really warm and open-hearted. He, I think he was one of the first people that came up and introduced himself to me. And that's always it's a great courtesy when one of the series regulars, you know, comes and sort of welcomes a guest performer into the group, you know, rather than approaching, you know, half cocked. It's helpful when somebody says, "Hello, hi, I am Jason. Welcome." I, you know, credit that in part to his theater experience. You know, he really considers himself a theater performer. As I know, did Michael Richards and Michael, I had originally met. He was taking a class at prior to Seinfeld at Stella Adler Academy with a teacher named Joanne Linville. And I believe, and I don't know this, and I really like to know, and I'll. It's interesting in that Stella and Joanne were always, at that time, talking about the importance of an entrance, the importance of an exit, the fact that you really have to bring on a whole world, a whole life from where you had previously been. Now, I know that Michael is probably, you know, he's an incredible performer, and he probably would have naturally done this, but I was always wondering if Joanne did indeed help coach him for that that part, which I know she did work with him on roles from time to time. If they had talked about this idea of entrances and exits, because that was certainly something that for the entire run of the show that Michael always did with such great finesse. And in fact, one of the things I remember was that even between takes, there he was, you know, backstage or when we weren't shooting, he would be practicing his entrances, his exits, you know, because you know, inspired, but also very technical performer as well. And so that was really interesting. And then Jerry was, was really great. He was very welcoming. And the thing I remember about Jerry is that I had heard and, you know, saw, you know, I guess craft services backstage, you know, where you go get a snack. There are all the cereal boxes lined up just as they are lined up on the set. And Jerry is indeed a big fan, or at least was at the time, of, you know, he'd make himself, you know, cereal combinations of four or five or six different, you know, types of cereal. So that was really interesting to, you know, to see and have confirmed.
Fascinating. I mean, between the skateboard and the serial, it just sounds like he just never grew up, which is exactly what you'd expect for, you know, a comedian. He's got that same, you know, persona, and it's true to life, which is great. And the Michael Richards stuff, we have heard that from a lot of guests. So it's interesting that you picked up on that too, that he has that, you know, practicing in the entrance and that. So that was great mm-hmm. insight. You know what I was thinking too, is your coming up from a lane from behind, with the old like choke and scare her, right? Was that you? Was that Tom Sharonis? Was that Melman? Like, where did that little, I mean, it's a great scene. I mean, just to kind of throw that in there, just to kind of think about like, hey, let's make him, you know, let's double down on the name and everything like that.
Again, back to this idea of Stella Adler and the entrances and the exits, and, you know, cause I had trained, you know, with Stella as well. And it just seemed appropriate. The thing I had to be careful of or try to figure out was make it a little bit ambiguous, but I guess it was seemed a little bit, you know, I mean, you know, it says he comes up from behind Elaine, but I thought if it sort of had a little bit of a flavor that it might, is he choking her? Is he massaging her? What is he doing? So,
yeah, and it ties into the masseuse of the episode and everything else right. and the riff.
Right.
So you gave that your own little twist, essentially. They let you do that.
Yeah, I mean, certainly. I mean, the actor's responsibility is to provide the director and the producers with options. And, you know, I would have been perfectly happy if they had said, nah, we don't want to do that. That's do something else. You know, it's just little things like, you know, in the scene where, and I don't know if it's even in the scene where Joel says, Ned, in exasperation, you'll notice that Joel has one leg up on the chair in much the same way the little picture behind has one leg up on the chair. It's just, you know, just little things that might help flavor the scene, you know. And in fact, certainly Larry David himself, you know, you had mentioned Cheers, and Larry David did as well. He had, you know, it was very obvious to me, you know, once I saw Curb Your Enthusiasm that there was going to be a continuation of all of his vast contributions on Cheers, you know. And what I mean by that is, I mean, one of the things he said, you know, he was always trying, you know, little different lines and tweaks here and there. And he called me aside. He says, yeah, he said, I hear you, you played that French guy on Cheers. He said, okay, you know where, so the original line where Joel says, Elaine says, Remy, and then Joel says, Remy Rifkin, should I wear a beret? The line was originally, Remy Rifkin, should I smoke cloved cigarettes? And Larry says, why don't you play the French guy, why don't you say, should I wear a beret? And so that's how, you know, how that came into existence.
That's great.
Classic.
That is great.
So you're right. The minutiae is incredible. That. I mean, I didn't know that about Michael Richards at Stella Adler. That's fascinating because, you know, when people think of Seinfeld, you know, they think of Jason as the trained actor, if you will. Hmm. But the other guys are kind of just, you know, comedians. They never run a sitcom before. It was kind of different. They kind of made it their own, if you will. But it wasn't like, you know, Jim Burrows and you know, from Cheers, who've kind of done this over time. So that's super interesting. And but the whole French connection, let's touch on that for a second. I feel like you're, you know, outside of this, whether it was, you know, All Right Already, I think you played a French guy in that too. You're
French
getting
Canadian hockey player.
Yeah. And then obviously this little, the Remy connection plus the stuff in Cheers.
The nanny, I played a French photographer. I've had a lot of French or French Canadian type characters. And
yeah. Is that because you mastered in French and you kind of had some of that background, or is that a complete coincidence?
Well, French was actually my major and I studied in France. It was my second major. I did a major in communications with film and television with a writing emphasis. And again, I mentioned Cheers was my first break, and that actually was a real out of left field kind of experience, because my main agent who was representing me at the time was out of town, and her assistant called me and said, you know, I know you speak French, you studied French, would you be available to go audition for Cheers? They're rewriting, or they're writing in a character who's supposed to be a French photographer. And the audition is tomorrow morning. If you get cast, you will be working a couple hours later. It's all happening. The audition, the callback, everything's happening in within a few hours of each other. So I really didn't have any time to get nervous. And spent my time in France, I remember the French. I mean, I guess there was a little bit of a cliche at the time that, you know, the French would sort of poo-poo the Americans, but they wore American clothes. They, you know, watched American movies. They listened to American music. They, you know, just did everything American, except that there was always this a little bit of maybe arrogance or snobbery that would sometimes inject its way into their dealings with Americans. And so I was a little worried because I was afraid, you know, given that this was a rewrite, that Cheers, the writers on Cheers and producers, you know, they're kind of concerned that they would want somebody who actually was French, and they were going to cast somebody who actually was French. And so I pretended to be French when I went to the audition. And I just, right from the very get-go, you know, "Hello, it's my pleasure to meet you. We should read now." And so I actually didn't, even during the first episode, I didn't let on that I wasn't French because I just didn't want to mess things up. I was afraid that, you know, so it worked out. And then I was invited back and invited back again and multiple times. And it wasn't until I think the second or third episode that I finally had to confess that I wasn't French.
That is great. That is really funny. You had mentioned, I love that. And you had mentioned Jennifer Coolidge. You knew her from the Groundlings. Yes. Did you study at the Groundlings as well? Or you just had to go into shows?
To study the Groundlings. I admired the Groundlings. I would go to their shows, the main stage shows, the Sunday shows that would have the up and comers. And just got a chance to, you know, this was at the time where, you know, you would see, you know, Will Ferrell, Sherry O'Terry, you know, obviously Jennifer Coolidge. You know, it just, you know, goes on, you know, the list of all these really talented performers. And so, yes, I was aware of Jennifer's work and definitely got a chance to follow her work, you know, afterwards and see a lot of her shows and her performances. And it was really kind of great to see her. She says, "Oh, you know, there's this character that I've been working on." You know, she has lips like she kind of has a plastic surgery. And, you know, it really was just all of these, you know, the sort of the beginning of all of these characters that she has, you know, played. I mean, you know, as recently as, what was it?
White Lotus.
Tanya. Yeah. The White Lotus. You know, and certainly Best in Show.
Guest, yeah, all the Christopher Guest stuff. Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
all of those characters.
I mean, you definitely have that that improv background just from what you just said. I mean, going into an audition and acting and being French for and then carrying that out the entire time and just the idea of doing the joke. I mean, all that stuff is like, you know, tied into that. Like you said, just knowing the moment and just you know, yes, ending in improv. And so it's definitely interesting.
Yeah, I'm also reminded that that was also a weird. There were just so many weird things happening that week. I remember Larry David was sort of off to the side, very serious kind of phone call going on, and I happened to be passing by. "Is everything okay?" He says, "I think my house might be burning down in the Malibu fires." You know, because it was, you know, that was going on, and. Another, I guess it's sort of a non sequitur, but another kind of random memory I have of reporting to set at Seinfeld and sort of driving in through the gates is actually passing Michael Richards on his bike, riding to work, you know, with his kind of his hair, you know, sticking out of his helmet. And so he used to ride his bike to work, you know, from time to time, I guess. So.
Wow. So the Cheers experience Interesting. I can't believe you were proud. You're just sitting there talking, like pretending you're French to Ted Danson and everybody. Hilarious to think about that. So essentially a year later, right? The Seinfeld opportunity came about, your first tryout. You're a young guy at that point. Or, I mean, you just did four episodes of Cheers, right? The show at the time. Nerves? I mean, when you're auditioning for Seinfeld, I mean, what did you know about Seinfeld going in? I know, listen, they just got moved to Thursday nights, obviously a big hit show, but...
Oh, yeah.
Do you have any friends of the business that gave you any kind of, you know... Obviously, well, Larry David was Larry David at that point, right? So, yeah. I'm just curious.
I certainly remembered Larry David and Michael Richards also from and loved their work on Fridays, which was that show that preceded Saturday Night Live, or that not right. competed with Saturday Night Live, you know, for a couple of seasons. And I thought they were terrific and brilliant then. I mean, the main thing would be, I guess, with any show, you know. I remember obviously really having to ask myself and making sure, okay, what's the style of this show? How do people speak on this show? What is the cadence of the script and the lines, the way things are written? I mean, you know, you think of an Aaron Sorkin production and, you know, there's a sort of cadence to the way things are done. David Mamet, there's a cadence also in comedy. I mean, certainly, you know, there was a cadence to Seinfeld, and I was certainly hoping that I was going to be in a position to capture that cadence, fit in, seem like I was part of that world. That's just my obligation as a performer trying to get work there. And again, as I mentioned, I mean, I originally went in, you know, playing an Italian with an Italian accent. So I was just very grateful to have an opportunity to play just a straight forward American. I you know, had done a lot of sort of European type roles. I was very grateful for them. Listen, I'm not casting aspersions on that, but it was nice also just to kind of play a regular guy who happens to have the same name as a serial killer.
Yeah, I mean that's the one twist, right? You know, you brought it up earlier, and I just wanted to go back to it because we just find that we love when there's connections like this. But you know, Kara Leifer ended up, mm-hmm. you know, casting you in her show after Seinfeld, and a lot of, you know, Melman got his own show for a bit. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Mandel and Bergen Schaefer went on to some great things after Seinfeld, but you know, they have that writing crew that sort of Larry Charles, yeah. Obviously legendary. But I'm curious, was Hirschfeld the casting director also for Carol Leifer? Does she remember you from Seinfeld? Was it just a coincidence, or was there, you know, a connection there where she brought you in, you know, from the Seinfeld experience, or is it just, you know, was it just a Hirsch? Do you remember like how that was? And also, was there other Seinfeld alum that you might recall, like from her show? I'm just curious if she kind of brought that with her or anything like that. But
oh yes, I mean, I know that you know. There were a number of guest performers that also appeared on Seinfeld. The All Right Already casting was a little bit unique in that I had gone back east after Seinfeld to work and train at the American Repertory Theater, which was, at Harvard University. It was a Tony Award-winning regional theater, and I just wanted to eat, breathe, and sleep theater for 2 years, which I did. I remember at the end of which, I was, you know, I got my benefits through SAG-AFTRA, and we were about to have a child, our second child. And so I was really anxious about having to get work. And so I went back to Los Angeles ahead of my, family to try to set up a place to stay. And I was staying with a friend who actually was close friends with one of his sort of apartment fellow tenants, and her name was Judy Toll, and she was a writer on Carol Leifer's show, All Right Already. And so that day, that evening that I landed, and I had all my stuff spread out all over his room, Judy Toll stops by and she sees my resumes on the floor and she picks one up. She goes, "Oh, you're an actor, huh?" I says, "Yeah." She says, "Oh, can you do a French character?" She says, "You've got this Canadian hockey player that maybe you could audition for." And Judy Toll is just she was a comedian. Sadly, she passed away at a very young age, but she was highly, highly respected. And I really owe it to Judy Toll for, number one, having benefits that our daughter was able to be born under, and for, suggesting me to All Right Already to play Mario, the hockey player. Mario wow. LaFontaine.
That's a great memory to share for sure about Judy. And again, I think it's these connections, whether it's in an apartment building or on a set, someone driving by in a bike. They're all important. You mentioned your children. We always like to ask our guests, your children into Seinfeld? Always curious to hear what the younger generation thinks, or do they love you more on Cheers? I'd love to hear what your kids think about Seinfeld.
That's funny. I don't think I shared that I was going to be doing this interview with my 14-year-old son, but I did find him just two nights ago watching Seinfeld. So clearly it still resonates.
You were such a young actor. I know you have a theater background and we can feel that's where your passion is from, but those early 90s, Cheers, Seinfeld, and I ended up on the finale of Friends. I mean, it must have been just a whirlwind.
It was a great privilege to even just be on the set of some of the greatest shows in the history of television and just watch the performers perform, watch how the writing staff just absolutely that's what's so great about getting an opportunity to work on a half hour comedy is because you get to see the creative process happen as it happens. You're getting to watch all of the iterations and watch how the writers shape their story and their episode from, version to version. You get to see what the performers are doing and why they were obviously cast, because there are so many just great one thing I thought was really interesting, for instance, with Ted Danson, he was very, very, very generous to me. Usually what happens is that, or what can happen is that sometimes, a guest performer will come on and, there might be some tension because there's this sense of, oh, well, they're getting all the laughs, or they're trying to outperform me, or they're this or they're that. And, it just shows what a great comfort Ted Danson had in his own skin. He knew that the entire world revolved around his orbit, that the audience saw the show through his eyes and he didn't have to prove anything. And that the better the show was in general, it would reflect well for his character, Sam. And in fact, I was speaking with one of the editors and they said, oh yeah, you'll notice that in scenes and Cheers where Sam's not even a part of it, we'll go back to Sam, maybe from the other side of the bar, just looking up and observing a scene on the other, sort of happening at the other side of the bar, because that is the reminder that the audience is seeing the show through his eyes. He is, the one that the audience is invested in. So when somebody has a great comfort like that, and they just say, have at it, go perform, let's do this. It was a really great, great privilege.
Wow, that's incredible. I never really thought about that too at Cheers. That is kind of how the show is, right? It's from his lens, from behind the bar, kind of watching everything. And we've heard similar stories about the Seinfeld set being, mm-hmm. unselfish and just caring about the laugh and not worrying about who gets it, and it doesn't have to be Jerry, and letting guest stars like yourself shine, you know, that's great to hear. I'm sure you saw that too on the Seinfeld set.
Just absolutely,
unselfishness.
I have one thing I'm going to bust myself. If you ever, I feel so terrible. I remember, you know, Jerry had said something about, well, as part of the show, my name is Claude Seinfeld. And I had seen him backstage. And right after that, I said, oh, hey, Claude. And he just gave me this look, because I think he thought I was calling him a Claude, C-L-O-D. And I don't think it connected. So I've always regretted calling him Claude out of context and worrying that maybe he thought that I was insulting him.
Well, Jerry's a big fan of this podcast, so
you should ask him. Actually, you should ask him about when I had learned from a friend who had attended that. So Bill Gates every year would have something called, I think, the Microsoft Games, and Bill Gates would, you know, first of all, send out these very expensive invitations, you know, intricate little puzzle type invitations that would have to do with sort of these various games and entertainment that, you know, he would invite, I think, his top sort of 100 friends. And I had heard that year or previous year, he had invited Jerry Seinfeld to do a stand-up for this group. And it was really interesting to ask Jerry about that. You know, and I'll leave it to him to share the experience.
Yeah, I'm sure that was a tough ticket, and I'm sure he was paid handsomely, I would imagine. Right. So, this was this is season 5 Seinfeld. I mean, mm-hmm. for our money, probably the best season. There are no downs. I mean, it is just boom every episode, bang, 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 and Moussous obviously standing out. Did you, speaking of like Microsoft had parties, did you go to the Seinfeld rap party? Do you remember?
Yes, it was held at the conservatory or the observatory. I'm sorry, Los Angeles Observatory, outside. And it was a beautiful, afternoon. Everybody was, in high spirits. I think they played a blooper reel. I know that a lot of times, you know, blooper reels are played. I know Cheers at the end of every season would play a blooper reel. I think Seinfeld did the same. I was just very, very grateful to have a chance to, you know, it's just great. You know, you're watching a show and you see the set, you know, as a fan, and then to be able to actually step onto that set and interact with these performers, I mean, and these characters, I think it's kind of what a lot of us probably wish we could do. And so I was just so grateful and so lucky to be able to have that opportunity and get to, you know, sort of enter into this world that I so admire.
One more for you. I tell us a little about what you're up to now, but it sounds like based on what I read, I think the inspiration came from you keep talking about all these writers and how they're creating stories and, developing that, whether it's on Cheers or Seinfeld, but it sounds like that's what you're up to these days, right? Are you in the creation of stories and film for certain companies? Tell us a little bit about what you're up to these
days.
Sure.
Well, I think every actor should write, and certainly, I mean, there's a dearth of performers who have found their own success by writing their own material. I think that's great. I actually, am working on a project actually right now with a producing partner, but I actually really have missed acting. And I am fortunate enough to have signed with an agent back down in Southern California. And I am, my wife, I say down in Southern California because my wife is finishing up a graduate program here in Victoria, British Columbia, which is where we were during a lot of the lockdown. And so I look forward to getting back into Southern California performing again. I've done a couple of plays. I've actually went to San Francisco Bay Area and worked on the other side of the camera as an in-house producer and director for various financial and tech companies. And because I also really was interested and wanted to sort of hone those skills as well. But even during those times, I hung on by a thread. I did, you know, as you mentioned, have an opportunity to have a recurring role on Sense8, and also performed in, what else was in San Francisco? All Day and a Night, Netflix original. So
very nice.
I'm looking forward to, you know, and also, you know, you were talking about your hearts in the theater. I actually really loved half hour comedy for that reason, because it's in front of a live audience. The audience is the ultimate arbiter, right? If you're not funny, they're not laughing, and or if it's not connecting. And they also give you some good feedback and good energy. So I've always loved and really appreciated just half hour comedies as a form.
Yeah. Well, Anthony, you know, you mentioned you were blessed to do these things, to be on these shows you love, and we're blessed to watch you. So thank you so much. I'll leave you with this.
Thank you.
You know, what do you think? What did Joel Rifkin change his name to in your mind? Was it Dion? Was it Stuart? What do you think?
Oh, well, that's funny. I would have to mention this. So my water polo coach, I was playing water polo at the time. His name was Stuart. He came to the show. And so he was absolutely thrilled. And he insists and has told everybody that the reason that I pitched the name Stuart is because he is my water polo coach. He's in the audience. So I guess I'm going to have to go with Stuart, because that was his first choice.
Elaine's response is great to that one, too. Go and shop at Little Stuart.
Oh, that's great stuff, Anthony. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Anthony. Really appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.